had a film made about you, who would play you?
Sam Rockwell.
Who's he again? I know the name.
He is in Seven Psychopaths. You know the guy I mean. I think I look a tiny bit like him. There's a vague visual similarity, but I think he's got a similar kind of like energy about him. And I think he's a fantastic actor, most importantly. It would be Sam Rockwell.
You really had that one.
Have we?
No, I was just saying you really had that one ready.
I mean, it's something I have thought about before, you know, because I've got a weird brain like that.
I recently, so because he's also in Three Billboards, isn't he? He's the like the main police character, isn't he? Yeah, and that's a brilliant movie. And I recently watched, it's Martin McDonagh, isn't it, the director? I recently watched The Banshees of Inisherin, is that how they say it? Don't know, have you seen that?
It's a fantastic film. Yeah, the guy who strikes me the most in that film and in all the films he's been in is obviously Brendan Gleeson and Colin Farrell are incredible, but it's the young lad, Barry McKeogh. He is so good in everything that he's in. I think he is the best actor of his generation. I think he's fucking incredible. He has been nominated, I think, for a bunch of awards for his role in that. So he plays the young lad that gets hit with the iron by his dad, that gets abused by his dad, who's the cop on the island. But he's such a great actor, that kid. He's one to watch for sure. Like, if you're not already watching him, he's the guy.
Yeah, because he's obviously, the thing I find with all of these films, looking at like In Bruges or Three Billboards or like Seven Psychopaths, all of the characters, what I could never pin down what I loved about the films. And I think it's that every character is just like 10% weirder than a real life person. You know, just enough where you're like, huh, that's not normal. Like, they'll say something where you're like, that's not a normal way to talk. But it's not weird enough that it's like a caricature. It becomes this weird, like, you're in another world, but you're very much not. And I think that's, for me, that's what I find really draws me to them. And I found, again, with everyone's sort of performance, I did find it deeply depressing. As much as it was a brilliant movie, it came out the end of it like, geez, like, that was... I was kind of, having seen In Bruges, I was like, I didn't know if this was going to be like a sort of, I had no expectations. I didn't watch any summaries or anything before. So kind of came out of that a bit like, whoa.
Yeah, his cinematic universe is hyper real, is what I would say it is. As you say, it's like, it's grounded in reality. It's not fantasy, but it's heightened and bizarre. And yeah, there's definitely a otherworldly quality to all the characters, but it that is grounded enough in day-to-day life that it doesn't take you out of the realms of reality, but it does make you think, like, as you say, these cats are on the spectrum.
I thought what was really interesting, because the I forgot what was the name again, sorry, the actor that you said, the younger guy, I've forgotten his name, you said, very good,
Barry McKeogh, I think is how you pronounce his surname.
Yeah, because his character, like, It's watching like the facial expressions and everything, like, there's so much in there that I think it's so many sort of basically not so good actors would do them, and but you maybe would just be like, I know you're acting now, you know. It's not in the speech, it's in the little drop of the eyes or the scrunching of the face, so you're like, whoa, that I was consciously seeing that, thinking that's really true.
He's psychologically in it, and as you say, those little mannerisms in a lesser actor would seem like forced overacting, but in him, he embodies that character so entirely that those little mannerisms and tweaks are part of the character that invest you so much into the performance that you forget it's a performance because it's so convincing. I think he's brilliant. I think he's so good, and really pleased to see all the success that he's enjoying, and I'm really excited to see what he does next and beyond. I think he's going to be really fast. Like, he reminds me a lot of Leonardo DiCaprio in that kind of, you know, What's Eating Gilbert Grape performance. Obviously, he's a bit older now than Leo was then, but I definitely think he's going to be like a lead actor soon enough.
What do you think draws you to particular artists, not just in movies, but like music or art, like sort of, you know, paintings, etc.? What do you think, what sort of emotional qualities do you think draw you to particular artists and bands and, you know, creatives in that way?
I just need one thing, really: authenticity. That's it. If it comes from the heart and I feel it to be real, then I'm in. even if it doesn't directly resonate with my personal taste, as long as it comes from an honest, raw, authentic place, whatever the medium is. That's kind of it. That's all I really look for. And all the arts that I love the most are those that are so authentic and sincere and bleed every essence of their being into what they do. Because I can spot a faker a mile off. Like, I've been doing this and chatting to people long enough now, you can see who's in it for the art and the creative purposes and who's in it to make money or to be famous or, you know, whatever it is that drives people. I don't know. But yeah, man, as long as there's integrity and authenticity there, I'm in.
Mm. I felt like you were sort of staring into my soul there, like figuring out, am I, how
no,
how
no, real? No. No, like, no, no judgment here, mate. You seem real enough.
trying my best, faking it really well. Yeah, I mean, do you feel like there's more or less authenticity now from, say, when you started your career in general and what you see?
Oh, in the world, there's 1,000% less. Yeah. I mean, it's dying on a daily basis. It's really depressing. I think social media is a huge factor in that, and the rise of influencers and celebrity culture that's taken now kind of... Reality TV was the birth of it, but now everybody's a reality TV star in their own lives. And, you know, just because people take a photo on their iPhone, they're instantly a photographer, because they take a selfie of them in their bedroom, they're instantly a model. And like, yeah, I find it all so fickle and disposable. And yeah, it's disheartening, man. You know, I've been doing what I've been doing for a long time. And when I started out, social media was a backdrop. It wasn't, you know, at the front and center of whatever it was, whether it's radio or music or, you know, it was a tiny component of the overall thing, but the overall thing was the creative output. And now there's this word called content, which people love to use, which I fucking loathe, because content to me just is such a yucky, disposable term that is applied to, you know, stuff which is not art. There's no substance to a lot of it. And yeah, I have to take myself away from that world as much as possible to maintain my own enthusiasm for what I do. And last year, I took a huge break from my podcast, Life in the Stocks. I did about 8 episodes in the whole year. And usually I do 52, like one a week. And I was just getting so disheartened by everything around me that, you know, rather than continuing to do it and not be invested in it, I just took a break and allowed that space and time to, you know, do what it did to me, and it had a really positive effect. And now I'm, you know, sort of infused by the whole thing again, and take it for what it is. If you know, you can't fight it, you can't fight the turning of the tides. I think you've just got to let what happens in this life. And just as long as you can keep your side of the street clean and you can just, you know, strive to be the best version of yourself and do what you're doing with intent and, you know, the right driving forces behind it. And that's all you can really do. And not that what I'm doing is any more honorable or, you know, credible than anybody else's, but there's just a lot of phony, fake people out there. And maybe they were always there, they just didn't have the platform before. I don't know. But I do feel like the internet culture that pervades modern day society is a huge part of the downfall of, you know, authenticity and these things that for me is what drive me and inspire me. They're real. There's still like those real people are out there, though. They're few and far between now. But I guess if anything, now those people are worth more than before, and we've got to, you know, cherish them and hold on to them and value them.
Yeah, I it reminds me of when I was talking to a friend this weekend, and he lives in London, and he's very much part of the kind of corporate world in London. And he was saying about how, and I feel like this is a real reflection of what you were saying, he was saying about how, for example, going to a bar or a club or something, in terms of the people he's friends with and the places he goes, he's not like mega rich, you know, but he's saying it feels so difficult because there's always this buy-in, like, you know, you've got to be drinking this and you've got to be wearing this. And, you know, if by default you're not walking in with like a fancy top on and some expensive watch and that, you're just not part of the crowd. And I feel like that's always been a thing in, you know, things like going out and you know, sort of nightlife maybe. But looking at social media now, there is this buy-in, this almost lack of authenticity level, like buy-in, where you almost have to ditch a bit of authenticity, it seems, to buy into the success, you know, finding some success. You know,
unless you're authentically invested in capitalism.
True. Yeah.
Because what that is a slightly different thing, I think. What that is materialism, and that is status is acquired through wealth. And there's definitely people who are 100% authentic about their love for that. Unfortunately, your friend perhaps sounds like someone who's in that world but not of it, so has to play the role, even though that isn't him. So he perhaps maybe like he feels, this is me just judging someone I don't know from afar, but maybe he feels like he isn't that, but has to be that to get by in the area that he works in. But I have no doubt that there are people that he does work with or around or who are in those kind of places in that world that are authentic in their absolute adoration of wealth and money and material gain, because that's a product of capitalism. And capitalism is stronger than it's ever been, for sure. Like, you know, without jumping down the political rabbit hole, you look at how destitute so many sections of our society are today. I was having a chat with a taxi driver about this last night, actually, just how broke people are, how absolutely broke and impoverished even the middle class of the UK are at the moment, because of how tough times are and the cost of living crisis and all that. That's a direct result, I think, of obviously Tory government, and but also capitalism just being the overall pervading religion in 21st century life, where people now, rather than perhaps worshipping a god, now the new god is money. And our society worships that with plastic surgery, with jewelry, with houses, with cars. You know, that is the new highest power, isn't it? Is how fucking rich and wealthy and powerful are you? But again, I think that there's authenticity in that world. It's just not the same taste as mine.
I think there's there is a kind of, I think something musicians and creatives, not all, but a good few, need to maybe get into the head is the idea that there is this almost romantic, again, this is only my opinion, but there's this romantic idea of what pursuing a creative career is. You know, you're following your passion, your dream, and that, which for sure, like for a lot of people, they're doing that. But I think it's a double-edged sword in that, one, a lot of people going into like more commercial corporate kind of careers find a genuine passion in just building something, whatever that something is, they enjoy building it. And two, on the flip side, a lot of people fall into creative careers, take comedians, how many of them are in comedy because they're desperate for attention and that drew them into this world of just musicians as well, you know. So I think it's like, I feel like some musicians maybe have this romantic idea of I'm doing this because it's my true passion. But actually, I think there are a lot of people that find passion in a lot of other things that may be less, what's the word? It just needy. Exciting. Maybe, yeah, needy might be exactly the word. And then...
Yeah, because I know loads of people who work, you know, not necessarily corporate jobs, but they work regular jobs. And then in their spare time, they're creative. And then the creativity is actually still pure. Because what does happen, and you know, I just sort of gave an example of that, is my creative work life, because it is work life, I sometimes get jaded by the creative aspect of it and had to take a break. Whereas if I just worked a regular job, I was a teacher or whatever I was, and then I just did a podcast for fun, that podcast is only ever going to be pure, and my enjoyment of it is only ever going to be pure. But when it is your job, it is romantic and it is awesome, but you get jaded because you're breaking your back trying to make a living doing what you love. And then the thing that you love no longer becomes the thing that you love for a while. And you really have to work. It's like a relationship. You have to work hard to keep the spark alive. Otherwise you can fall into a rut and you just go through the motions. And then the next thing you know, you turn around and you're like, oh, I don't even like this person, or in this case, this role anymore, because of the pressures of the commitment and the long-term investment in it. And yeah, you really have to work at it and keep your keep the kind of relationship with the creative aspect of it pure. And I think that people who only do creative stuff for passions, purely passions, then it always remains pure, I think. And there's definitely something to be said for that, which I do envy in some people, because, you know, I should be totally stoked on everything that I do all the time because it is, you know, the stuff of dreams. But I can't help but become occasionally jaded by it because I'm like, fuck, I'm out here 37, broke as fuck, still grinding, can't pay my bills. And I think sometimes, like, why do I do it? But then I'm always reminded, oh, I do it because I love it, and I couldn't actually be anything else or do anything else. So I've got to take the rough with the smooth and just, you know, ride it out.
Yeah, it's it kind of go what you were saying about I definitely know that feeling. I mean, I teach guitar, and so I'm exposed every day to people who are doing exactly what you're saying, you know, taking on a creative pursuit purely as that. And I almost find it, I almost remind myself every now and again that I'm just these, it's kind of weird to me. These people are just doing guitar just because they just want to do guitar, you know.
I think that's awesome, man. Like, I don't have any hobbies. All my hobbies are my work. And so I don't have that outlet. Like when I want to switch off or just, you know, get into that pure zone, I don't have it. I don't have the time. I also don't have the inclination. And I think it's awesome, you know, whether it's gardening or painting or, you know, even running, like whatever it is that people do to just get out of their head for a bit and, you know, just be in the moment of enjoying whatever the thing is. I think it's so awesome and so freeing and so liberating and vital, really, to a human being's overall well-rounded. And that's perhaps why I'm not the most well-rounded person, is I actually don't have hobbies and maybe I need one.
The because with kind of all the stuff you're doing, and you know, the first thing I saw when I sort of did the deep dive on your Instagram was you did like a little summary few reels of your year, you know, your last year, and you know, for me, just looking through that, I recognized lots of moments. You know, I know that band or that, you know, whatever it was you were doing. When you're doing such a varied kind of selection of things to build a career, do you ever find yourself getting sort of spat out of it at the other end going, oh, I didn't actually take that in and enjoy it as much as I should? Or are you good at enjoying all? Because I saw so many moments across those different reels that you shared. I was like, how do you even take all of that in, you know?
Yeah, last year was wild for that. Because those three reels that are currently, as we talk, they're still at the top of my Instagram profile. And that's 1 year in three reels. I had to do three highlights rather than one because there was so much. And it was this insane year, man. Like I was jumping from tours to cruises to New York to Woodstock to Malta, like to festivals, just here, there and everywhere. And I'm very good. I'm very good at being conscious of the moment, in the moment. I've always been good at that just because life goes by so fast. And I'm never someone who looks back. So I have to just in the moment take it for what it is. But then there are times when stuff does kind of slip through the net because, you know, you're onto the next thing already. But what I realized about those reels that I made, and I'd never really had done anything like that before, what I realized was like 80% of my life is music. And I did almost quit music last year because I was just tired of not making money from it. And I was like, you know, I'm in my mid-30s, getting towards my late 30s. I see all my friends who own houses and are financially secure, as much as anyone can be in today's world. And I just thought, like, man, a large part of me at this stage of my life wants a bit of that life, wants just a bit of stability. And without being big-headed, like, I can look back at what I've done over the last 13 years and go, I've done everything I ever wanted to do. I've been on the radio, I've been on TV, I've written books, I've written hundreds of articles for various magazines, websites, outlets. I've interviewed all my heroes, become friends of a lot of them, toured with a lot of them, traveled. Like, I've done everything I wanted to do. The only thing I don't have in my life is stability. So I was like, maybe I need to look for another avenue. But then I made those reels and I was like, man, the common thread in my life and the source of so much joy and excitement and, most importantly, I think, meaningful relationships all stems from music. And I was thinking, like, man, if I didn't have music, what would my life look like? It would be vastly different to what it looks like now. And I don't know whether I'm ready for a change that drastic yet. So I'm like, I'm going to stick it out for a bit, because music's been the most incredible thing for me. Considering I don't play it, I don't make it, music is the source of everything that is good in my life. And so I have to value that and recognize that and keep, I think, keep chipping away at whatever it is that I am or whatever it is that I do for that little bit longer in the hope that there is a payoff, hopefully just around the corner. Mm. And if not, what a life, what a blessed, incredible life I've had up until this stage. And I, you know, do need to every now and again remind myself of that, because there is always so much going on, you know, and it's hard all the time to be like, God, I'm so grateful. God, I'm so grateful. Because then you can come across as a bit grating and insincere. You know, these people who are like, practice gratitude every day. It's like, well, yeah, but you can't just all the time be like, I'm in this state of like self-aware bliss for everything that you have in your life, because, you know, I find that a bit pretentious. I think sometimes you just got to be in the action of doing whatever it is you're doing and enjoying the feeling of it. And then you can go, oh, actually, that was amazing. I'm really grateful for that. Yeah, a little bit of gratitude goes a long way, but you know, also throw yourself into the thing that you're doing and be in it as much as possible as well, if that makes sense.
I think sadly the whole being in the moment thing is
hashtag blessed.
just that's the podcast tagline for the whole cheers to that. I think that it's becoming perhaps harder for a number of reasons. You know, you talked about things like cost of living and all of that, to be in that moment, like, you know, to be enjoying that tour without thinking I'm gonna be fucking broke when I get back, or to, you know,
I actually did that at the end of the Bob and Soup tour because I was waiting on getting paid. I'm sure, I hope Jarrett won't mind me telling this story. And it was the last night of tour and I was broke. And I was like, I was worried about how I was going to get home from the last show. That's how broke I was. Not because Bob and Soup didn't pay me well, but just because the payment hadn't gone through yet. And, you know, and I'm just broke all the time anyway. So most people, when they're, you know, going to do a gig, they're not desperate for the money immediately because they have a reserve fund in their life. I don't have that. So if I do a gig, I'm like, I need to get paid like now. And it was the last night. And I just remember I had a few books left from the tour. And I went into Bob and Soup's dressing room because everyone was in there at the end. And I was like trying to flog the last couple of my books, like after the show. And Jarrett was like, and he's one of my dearest friends, and I could see he was pissed off, man. He's like, you're coming into my dressing room on the last night of tour and trying to sell like your product. He was a bit like, dude, come on. And I was like, but I'm broke, man. Like, I need this fucking 40 quid from these two books to get home. And he was just like, and Jeremy from Lit just like gave me 50 fucking pounds and bought two books for these two girls that were there that were like, they were both wanted to buy a book, but they didn't have any money. So he just bought two for 50. They had the books. And I was like, now I can get home. Great. But like, you know, that is the reality of it. Like, yeah, you're on tour with your best friends and heroes and you're loving it, but you're like, fuck, man, when this tour's over, it's not just the depression of the tour being over and the experience being over, which is a real thing, man. The post-tour blues, I don't get them so much anymore because I'm aware they're coming, so I do certain things to counteract it. So like, if a tour's ending somewhere, I'll stay on there a couple of days rather than rush home to just be like, you know, back in life, to extend the, you know, the come down and come down gently, as it were. But yeah, you don't want to think, you don't want to worry too much about that when you're in it, because otherwise you ruin the experience of what it is to be in it.
And when you're kind of coming, yeah, because obviously the kind of the change in state, you know, mental state from, and it's not just that, you know, it's maybe you'll be like presenting this one thing and then you're back home doing something else. And then, you know, most people, again, taking the more regular job kind of look, will wake up the same time, go to work the same way, come home the same time. And then it will be the exception where they go out one night and do something different, or they have a day off to go and do something a bit different. And obviously when your mental state is kind of changing, not necessarily for the worse or anything, but just in different places all the time, yeah, kind of wibbly wobbly sort of thing. How do you kind of keep yourself in check mentally when you're kind of taking on all these different roles and, you know, maybe touring one week and then back doing a different job the next week? How do you kind of keep a sort of mental, I guess, sort of mental hygiene, if you will, if you know what I mean, like looking after yourself in that way?
Well, that is the ongoing struggle, mate. I'll be 100% honest. That is still something that I work on, and still something that I struggle with, because it's near impossible to maintain a sense of normality in an abnormal lifestyle. And that in itself is the comfort. And my friend recently pointed something very profound out to me, and he sort of said, he's a rep for many different companies, Academy Music, Live Nation. So he goes on tours with bands and rep shows. So he understands the world and he understands me. He's done many tours with me. And he was the first person to ever say this to me. Sometimes you need someone else to point it out. But he was like, Matt, nothing that you do is normal. You know, you're dancing the YMCA in front of 8 to 10,000 people at the O2 for a monster truck show 1 minute, which in itself is like the most insane feeling. And then you're on this rock and roll tour, and then you're broke, and then you're going on a cruise. And he's like, nothing about what you do is in any way sane. So the fact you often feel insane is totally actually normal. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, I'd never really thought about it. I just thought I was insane. I was like, maybe I am, but the world around me is insane too. So I'm a reflection of that. And that awareness and acknowledgement of that detail has been massively helpful for me, and not, and it's allowed me, sorry, to not get too swept up in the highs and the lows, and try and just maintain a sense of zen in the storm. And like alcohol and drugs and things like that, obviously throughout time, performers have used those things to continue the high or to deal with the low. And that is a very precarious world to enter as well, if you've already got a bit of a inclination for those things, which I have and did have going into this kind of career. I was already like a fucking party monster, and I've always loved, you know, drinking and whatever else. But you really have to watch your intake with this kind of work and this kind of lifestyle, because that can swallow you up whole. And a lot of people have been over the years. And my friend Ian Winwood recently kind of wrote a book about all of that, which is really interesting. And again, that sort of made me feel less alone. But now I'm in a really good place, because I take extended breaks regularly, you know, whether it's a month or 3 months, and I'll go completely sober for that time and prove to myself that I don't need it, I don't necessarily want it, I can do all the things that I do without it. But then every now and again, if the occasion calls, I'll dive, you know, headfirst into that world and indulge in all manner of things as well, but do so only now in a celebratory moment where it's not to mask the sadness or the pain of something being over. And by the same token, to not dilute the actual experience itself, which on its own is awesome. And I think sometimes you can like ruin your appreciation of an experience by getting intoxicated, because the experience itself is enough and should be enough. And if you can't enjoy it on its own, you're really missing out on the magic of it. But in terms of staying grounded, that is a process which is ongoing to this day. Like, I don't have any sense of ego, or like, I don't get lost in what I do and think that I'm amazing. I genuinely don't, although some people who don't know me might think that. I'm a very grounded, humble individual, but sometimes the insanity of what's going on around me does sort of threaten to sweep me up in its momentum. And it's in those moments that I have to kind of hit the brakes and take stock, no pun intended, and be like, okay, this is awesome, but let's not get carried away here. And also, this is going to be over in a couple of weeks, and then what's going to be next? We've always got to start looking ahead. And I wasn't good for that last year. So the first 6 months of last year was like fucking one after the other. And then it got to summertime, and I don't really work festivals because it's just financially not really worth it to me, the amount of money you spend getting there whilst you're there. Like, unless it's a festival I really want to work. I haven't done UK festivals other than Slam Dunk for the last few years for that reason. So summer for me was just like total dry spell. So I then just went and worked full time for my mate at his pub, and that will ground you and that will keep you completely level headed. And I did it again over Christmas when, you know, because Christmas kind of things dry up again as well then. So yeah, the main thing for me, I think, is not actually just taking my eye off the long-term prize. And that is how I try and stay a little bit sane in this insane world, is looking at the big picture all the time and not just getting swept up in the one thing that I'm in.
Hmm. I think something we're doing a lot of nowadays is stacking all of these things that we enjoy. So like, you know, a simple example being like, if you cook yourself like a nice steak dinner or whatever, that in theory should be this really enjoyable thing. And then you put the TV on, and then you check your phone, and then you chat to someone and whatever. And you've got like four or five things going on. And they, I think we create this expectation, and I think phones have a lot to do with it. You know, we're always accompanied by like a message on your phone, or like a scroll of Instagram along with that other thing you're trying to enjoy. And I think we're getting to this point where like simple pleasures are becoming harder to acknowledge, because you're always checking your phone, you're always talking to someone. Like, obviously being connected to all the time, like it then loses that spark. And like, it's little things like if I'm driving, I try and just, I won't put music on unless it's a really long drive. Or like, if I'm eating my dinner, I'll just eat my dinner, you know.
Oh no, mate, I mean, simple things, that's all there is in this life. Forget the big, like, they're awesome obviously, but they're few and far between. Simple pleasures is the very fabric of life for me, and I'm actually the opposite of that. I don't, although people might think I'm on my phone all the time because I post quite a lot, I post and then get out. And I can look at my phone after half an hour of me and you chatting, and there's no messages that come through in that time. And like, I'm actually quite bad since COVID. I've almost like disengaged from communication in the digital form. And I just try and live in the world as much as possible without sounding like a pretentious arsehole. I like to just be in day-to-day life as much as possible. And like, going back to this guy last night, this taxi driver, me and him had one of the most beautiful chats I've had in weeks, you know, just a short 20-minute drive home last night. And I got in the car and the conversation was immediately just open and really profound and really like stimulating. And a lot of people, when you get, as soon as you get in the car, that's your time. You're on your own then. You've got a moment to check your phone. I try and do that as little as possible. So I'm looking around and I'm like, who's here in this train carriage or whatever it is with me? Rather than just going straight to that, let's engage with what's in front of us. Because it's fucking, that's where the world exists. That's where real life is happening. You know, this, pardon me, this is a scheduled digital conversation and this is awesome. But like, if you're constantly just trying to like be on the digital fucking, you know, landscape, you're not going to be engaging with what's happening in front of your very eyes all the time. And that's where all the magic of life is for me, all of it. The internet sucks.
it's one of those, I don't know how to predict where it will go. Because the potential is so, the range of potential with the internet, with AI, with all of this stuff is so drastically large. You know, it could potentially take all of the jobs no one wants to do and just create this utopia. Equally, it could render a large part of humanity feeling essentially useless, you know, and all of this stuff with the internet, you know, you can in theory connect everyone. But so far, I don't think it's done that job, you know. So I don't know how that's going to kind of end up. Oh.
I'm just doing the podcast. Hiya. As you were, mate.
I'd say hello, but it's just going
to... See, this is real life. This is the magic of real life I'm talking about.
Yeah, ignore that.
This is what makes it. So to your point there, just look at Madonna and look at her face and the way she looks now. Now, I think that is a direct result of social media trends and what this beautiful new idea of, not beautiful, so this bullshit new idea of what beauty and, you know, good looks should be. Like, with all the trends that are just only online, it popularizes the most, you know, insane way of thinking and like puts the most insane twisted view of self-worth on human beings. That one of the most successful and beautiful and awesome and creative and incredible artists of all time feels the need to fit in, to change. Like, have you seen the recent picture of her face from the Grammys? And you look at that, you get, that for me is what the internet is doing to the world and where it's going. Like, there's going to be people walking around with deformed faces that they've paid money to have done to themselves because they think that's the, you know, the big Kim Kardashian, like massive ass and shit like that. It's just like, it's, I mean, the people whose house I'm at the moment, they've got young kids. So I can't really understand the worry that they must have and parents must have for what social media trends and these new, you know, digital world, alternative realities are doing to young people's minds. It's terrifying, terrifying.
Yeah, it does. My parents live in the middle of nowhere, and it, you know, when I go there, and it's just there's just so much less going on. Yeah, I've still obviously got my phone; that all exists still. But if I just switch it,
never leave the house without it.
Nah, I haven't got any signal; it's fine. Yeah, like I quite often when I go there, I'll just get up in the morning and just go for a walk up and down the little village. Like it's such a small; it's not even a village; it's like a
road.
It is a road. Our house doesn't have a road address because it is just a road. Like there's no other roads there. It's just the
that
road.
That was me in COVID every day. And it, honestly, I've never been happier than the time when I was at my dad's house in the country on my own, writing my book, walking every day for like 10 to 15 kilometers a day. Wouldn't see humans for hours. And it's honestly like as somebody who used to be so grounded by social interaction, and when that was taken away, that really messed with my head for a while. But then I kind of readjusted to this new way of life, and honestly, walks in nature is the most pure, healing, positive, incredible thing for our mental health. And the more I think we move towards a digital world, the further we get away from that, the more damaging it is. Because just being in the park, you know, the forest, you know, the mountains, the beach, all these places. I think that is as close to God, if I can be so bold, as I've felt in recent times. And it's my true form of like reconnection and escape now. If I feel a little bit like the pressures of life are getting too much, you know, I'm not going on some podcast app trying to find some mindfulness exercise. I'm going straight out, outside, and immediately you just feel better about life. And it's the simple cure, I think, to a lot of what's wrong with society now. It's just people's disconnect with nature.
Yeah, I think that I definitely can resonate with that. Like you were saying, just simple walks, long walks on the beach and all that. But, you know,
it's incredible. Best stuff. And, you know, the younger me would turn his nose up at that, because I was always, you know, kind of like city rock and roll kid. As I was like, well, exercise, nature, you know, I want to be in the bar, I want to be late at night in the city. And that was always where the most exciting elements of life lay for me. And I still have that now. Like, I work at my friend's pub. I walk home from there, which is about an hour. Every time I do a shift, and I see every version of, you know, humanity out there at 3 a.m. down the street. You know, it's people vomiting and making out and fighting and singing, and you see every end game from a night out in effect, and you're like, oh, it's pretty gross. You know, like, I still enjoy a night out and I still drink and I still go out and have fun, but like, that for me is a pretty evident example of the the toxic nature of humanity.
Yeah.
Well, like, you know, we are our own worst enemy, and you can blame social media and the internet and AI and technology. You can blame all these things, but what's driving it all? It's still humans. They're just the medium. They're in our hands. It's still us that is creating the destruction and the damage. And I think that'll always be the case, because human beings inherently are, you know, monsters. Like, we are. There's good in all of us. There's bad in all of us. That's the fight. That's the struggle. But I definitely think everything that is wrong with the world is a result of mankind and not nature. You know, nature is as pure, again, not to sound like a hippie, but like, human beings have got a lot to answer for. And I think we deserve a lot of what's happening, because we've created a lot of it, unfortunately.
I think definitely. I think with, you know, talking about like AI and stuff, all of that being sort of the future, it seems.
AI is awesome. It's only in our hands that it becomes problematic. You know, like, there's a couple of AI accounts that I follow on Instagram of people who do like baby Danzig, and they do like baby rock stars. Have you seen this account?
I've seen all sort of amalgamation of various AI things, you know.
See, what's not to like about that? It's the same as a painting. It's just a different platform. And, you know, it's only worrying because the wrong human beings will begin to think, how can we use this, you know, for more sinister gains? But that's not the fault of AI. That's the fault of us as humans thinking, how can we use this for personal evil gain? You know, AI is fine.
Yeah. There's that study where the guy opened a fresh sort of Google account or a new phone or something, and all he searched for or talked about was puppies. And then all that came up was puppies. That's all that it showed. So, you know, the implication being that...
create the world around us.
Yeah. And, you know, you create this echo. What it does do, I think what is sinister about it, and but again, people made it. So it's that it creates that echo chamber of, you know, you know, I have my own opinions, but I know that if I were to have sort of searched maybe even just the first 20 searches I ever did on Google, if they were maybe completely different, I might have a whole world view that is entirely different to what I believe now. It's a bit scary,
which is why we all need to get off the phones and get out in life, because when you're out in life, you will meet people that have different opinions to you, and hopefully you'll talk with them and engage with them in debate, and then you can reach a conclusion whereby hopefully both of you have slightly shifted your opinion, you know, to the point where there's more common ground than before. And that's the thing I love about doing stuff like this podcast. It's the thing I love about working in and being in pubs. You know, pubs are great community centers. As destructive as alcohol is, I think pubs are these amazing community centers for people of all walks of life to sit together over a pint and talk openly, you know, about politics and about spirituality and about, you know, culture, and do so in a way where you don't go, oh my God, I disagree, blocked, erased. You know, like, people are quite one mind, single-minded in the internet world, and they do kind of create, as you say, these echo chambers where if somebody tweets a link to something they're not in, you know, support of, a lot of people will go, oh, this person, I deleted them from my friend list because they shared this one link. And you're like, or you could have been like, hey, I don't think that link's so great. Here's for why. And then you can tell me why you think it is. And then maybe we can, but you can't do that on the internet, as we all know, even with a, you know, a rational, sane, intelligent human being, because of the limitation of not just character length, but also tone and body language. Like, all these things are so important to get your point across. And dialogue, the minute dialogue stops, that's when, you know, bad things happen.
Yeah, I just think you never convince anyone of anything by shaming them into...
All you do is create in them more of a stubbornness to double down and actually perhaps lose sight of what they originally intended the point was, just to prove the other person wrong. You know, and you see a lot of that, you know, people like, well, fuck. And it's almost like people want to just self-destruct to prove, not even that they were right, just they don't care what the other person thinks, you know, and then the void becomes bigger and greater and more absurd. It's certainly a crazy, exciting time we're living in. There's never a dull moment, that's for sure. And I do think human beings have absolute potential to, you know, create, as I said earlier, any kind of world they want around them. You can curate your life, I think, in such exciting ways now because of the potential that technology does offer you. You know, it's just about how much you want to live your life and how much you want to engage with certain elements of it over others. The freedom and the potential is limitless, I think, which is exciting. But I think everyone needs to just be, including myself, more open-minded to other things that they don't perhaps understand, and perhaps attempt to understand them a bit better.
Well, I think we've never historically had to limit ourselves particularly. We've always, you know, going back, say, more than, like, I don't know, 40, 50, 60 years, you know, a lot of things are more scarce. You know, you if you wanted contact with someone, you had to go to the pub or you had to write them a letter or something. There was more of an entry level thing. There's more like a higher barrier to entry to basically everything. So
you knew where to go as well.
Yeah.
You know, there's a destination, or there was a method that was a single line of communication rather than just this smorgasbord, this, you know, absolute spider's web, which is overwhelming. It is. I mean, you look at the turn in, like, I mean, I'm not getting into the cancel culture debate, but I mean more when people perhaps tweet something and then everybody jumps on them, like Lily Allen did it with a pizza restaurant. I don't know if you saw this. We're Instagram buddies, and she...
That's quite a cool name drop.
Yeah, right? She tweeted like a picture of a pizza and was like, this pizza's awful. And she kind of like went on a bit of a rant about how bad this pizza was, right? And everybody, or her, this is her own followers, jumped on and were like, how dare you burn this independent business? Like, and, you know, it wouldn't be something I would do, but it's not the most evil thing in the world. Give them a break. We're all human. And what you see with social media and the internet is how quickly the tide can turn against you for the smallest of missteps, often by people who claim to be your followers and fans and supporters. It's terrifying. So that's why for me, I rarely have ever voiced my opinion about anything. You know, people might think, oh, Matt's super honest and like open on social media. I am, but only about what I want to share. And that's usually mental health, addiction stuff, music. And then that's kind of it. I keep my opinions about everything else off the internet because I'm not interested in getting into debates with anyone in that medium. And also, I actually don't really care a lot about a lot of it. I do just kind of think, for the large part, that isn't enough of a cause for me to get behind. So you can enjoy fighting amongst yourselves and I'll be over here enjoying life. Because life's short, man. We've got to enjoy it. And, you know, what do I know? I don't know anything. I haven't read the news in like 4 years, dude. So anybody watching this thinks that there's any wisdom here. Like, it's only my own life experience that I'm sharing. I don't claim to be in any way, you know, wise, smart, or have any of it figured out, because I don't read the news. I don't engage in any real social trends. All I do is just, you know, try and live the best life that I can and excite and entertain and enlighten myself in a myriad of ways through reading and conversations, and just try and live a, you know, a peaceful, positive existence. And that's kind of my question for next week. Just going to put this in now, it's on my mind. How would you like to be remembered when you're gone, is my question to whoever you chat to next.
Okay, I'll certainly keep that at the ready. Yeah, that's a good does make you consider what your priorities are in life, I guess.
Because for me, it's just to be a good person. Like, I haven't always been a good person, and I think that you know, I've definitely made mistakes in my life, and I have many regrets. But ultimately, at the end of the day, what I would like to be remembered for, above all else, is just that he was a good dude. He had good intentions. He tried to live a life that, you know, led by example, set examples, didn't always live up to it, but was always trying to do better. And that's kind of what I remember the most about that guy. He was just a good dude, good to chat to, good to be around. And that's kind of it. I'd be happy with that.
Yeah, well, that reminds me, funnily enough, topical of that Banshees of Inisherin, however you pronounce it. The moment where they're discussing what do you want to be remembered for, and I can't remember any of their names.
Because Brendan Gleeson wants to leave something behind, you know, whether it's a song or.
But he doesn't want to leave behind any niceness. He wants to leave behind something.
No. Greatness.
But it's a rather self-obsessed greatness, isn't it? It's like quite a sad kind of, I thought anyway.
Yeah.
He wants to leave behind something, I think, out of an egotistical, like, I want people to remember me as this great composer, you know. And then I couldn't help but want to just resonate with... Again, I can't remember the names because they're very Irish names.
Podrick or something, I think it was.
I think it's the Irish equivalent of Patrick, I'm guessing. And he just said he just wanted to be remembered for being nice, you know. And obviously that was sort of met with this sort of, you know, like almost disgust, really, from him. And you can't help but think that's not the right way to look at it, you know.
It's such a great film, I think, because it's a real interesting study of male ego and male relationships. And the Colin Farrell character, like, that's me. I identify wholeheartedly with that guy. And then there's other people who do, you know, want to leave behind a legacy of great achievements, and, you know, whether that's conquering or creating, sometimes they're one and the same. It's an interesting study of, I think, the male psyche, for sure.
Yeah, I couldn't help but kind of, like I said, I got to the end of the film, was like, this is just depressing, really. But I did like it. I thought, like you said, it did feel like a study, or like an observational study of things. But kind of with regards to identity and it sort of locking in with that character, how do you kind of form your own identity with so many different pursuits and things that you've done over the years? How do you, you know, when someone asks you the question like, who are you, or what do you do, or what makes you you?
It's my least favorite question in the world.
Sorry.
No. In this context, it's fine because this is different. But when I'd be at weddings for many years as, like, you know, one of the last single people. So you're on the table with all the other fucking single losers whilst all your other mates are, like, coupled up and having fun with friends. And every single time, obviously, the first question that a group of strangers always ask each other is, what do you do? And I'd always be really hesitant to answer it because I honestly don't know. And the minute you do, you start trying to explain it. And then all people want to know is, like, oh, who's the most famous person you've interviewed? And then you become like, although I'm an entertainer and a presenter and a performer, I don't want to be that in social situations. You know, people who know me might go, actually, I don't know, that sounds a lot like you. Depends on how much I've had to drink. But I don't just want to sit there and tell entertaining stories to a group of strangers and have my validation be judged. Or not my validations in my own head, I guess. Have my worth be judged by, you know, the level of fame and celebrity that I've encountered. And I would get to the point where I used to start telling people I was a lollipop man, just because it would then shoot down any follow-up conversation. You'd see how disinterested they would immediately become in you. And it's really interesting. They'd be like, what? I'd be like, yeah, like, no, okay, what do you do? And then they'd start talking. I'd be like, thank God for that. I don't know how I would describe myself. I still don't. I guess a freelance, full-time creative would be what I would like to kind of be known as, I guess. Presenter, obviously, DJ, writer, bunch of stuff. But just as a human being, just as me, as vague as cop-out as that answer is, I don't know what qualities I embody, because it's not for me to say, but I feel like I've always been the same person and have remained the same person and am the same person in every context that I find myself in. Certain sides of my character might come out more than others, depending on who I'm with or what I'm doing, but I've been lucky in my life. I've always been headstrong. I've always known who I am. I think some people don't know who they am still in, you know, their 30s where I am now. They're still trying to figure out, like, who am I? But when I was a kid, I knew who I was and what I wanted from life and who I wanted to be. And I've always known it. And so I've always felt secure and confident in myself. And what I do hasn't changed that. And I just, again, going back to authenticity, I want to be an authentic individual. And I want the things that I do to exemplify authenticity and integrity. And that's kind of the full extent of it, really. I don't really think any deeper than that, other than just, as I said, be seen and be a good person that people view as a good person. Kind of pretty simple. Life's pretty simple when you break it down. Like, treat people good, you know, try and, like, share joy, you know, and care for those who care for you. And beyond that, everything else is just pointless to me. I don't engage with identity politics in any way, shape, or form, because I think it gets divisive. I think for me, there's like two types of people in this world. There's cunts and there's non-cunts. And which one do you want to be? Well, I want to be a non-cunt. Thank you very much. That's it.
Yeah. There's no spectrum there. Just one or the other. Take your pick.
It's kind of black. Like, life is, I mean, on the one hand, everything in life is gray, right? You know, it's all mercurial and there's no clear cut. But then on the other hand, there kind of is. You know, there is a real duality to humanity where it's like, are you a good person or a bad person? And we're all bits of both, but it's your actions and how you live your life that speaks to who you are and how you carry yourself and what you do and how you treat other people tells me everything I need to know about you. Not you, but they're the proverbial you, us.
The proverbial you that is also you, but not just you.
There you go.
But
that's the tagline.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I hope all that makes sense. And like, it's funny for me because I love talking about all this stuff, but I'm always conscious that, you know, what do I know? I don't want to come across as some lofty, pretentious, like, you know.
Cunt.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I never thought I'd call a guest that in the, in 52.
And for have it to be received so well. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because I quite often talk about things like mental health on the podcast, and even that, you know, so quite often I share reels and stuff of little clips, and obviously, you know, you don't get the full context there. You get in like 30 seconds of information. And I
do draw people in.
Yeah. And I try and keep it fairly true to what the person said. I might chop it around a bit just so it's a bit more concise. But I've had some pushback on people's opinions about mental health. Obviously, I'm not professing to be any mental health expert, and neither is the guest, but I can see why. If you're just scrolling through and someone's saying a load of stuff about their experience of it, like there was a guy I had on recently who was talking about how you identify with your mental struggles, whether you place it on your identity or you maybe, it's like the difference saying I am X or I struggle with X, you know, being two different things. Yeah. And I actually got some pushback from people on that, because they were saying this is quite, a couple of people said this is kind of unhealthy, you know, because a lot of people struggle with stuff that maybe they can't cope with. And I, you
know. And that right there, to my point earlier, is why I'm like, you know, I'm not going to tell you my opinion on it, because, and this is different because this is an in-depth conversation. And, you know, people see a little bit of what I've said and go, I don't agree with that guy. I'm not going to then tell you why you should agree with me. I'm like, I don't care. And that probably isn't productive to a point, but people like to pick fights. And my problem with a lot of good intentioned people is like, they'll be picking on people with good intentions about why their intentions perhaps aren't as good as they could be. And it's like, well, what kind of a battle to pick is that? Like, they're trying to have, you know, something productive to say here, and all you're coming at them with is, oh, this is unproductive. And it's like, well, no, actually what you're doing is unproductive. And then they go, no, now you're being, and it's just, it gets too much. And what I probably, to sort of tie everything we're talking about into one observation that hit me really recently, one of the things I'm most grateful for in my life is I exist at a level where I have a following and I have people who tune in and support what I do with the podcasts and, you know, see what I say on and share on social media. And I never, touch wood, I never get kickback really to anything, because somehow, because I think because I've been doing what I've been doing for so long and I'm just outspoken enough, I think everybody who follows me at this point kind of knows, and I'm so grateful for this and lucky to have this, they sort of know what I'm about because of the amount of in-depth conversations that I've had. And I'm pretty clear and, you know, and also vague enough that they can't be like, oh, well, he's a cunt for thinking that. Like, I'm really lucky with the people that I've, the following that I've built in the time that I've been doing what I'm doing, because everybody just seems to get me. And I would sooner have, you know, a collective of say 10,000 casual people, wherever they are in the world, that wholeheartedly understand me, than like a million, and 90% of those don't. Because it's only when you reach a certain level of notoriety that then the casuals come in. And then, so maybe you're too big for your boots, mate, is what's happened, is there's too many casuals who've come to know this show and they don't understand, or perhaps the guests. I don't know. Does that make sense? Like, I've realized recently that I've got a very understanding and supportive, I don't want to say fan base because that's gross, but there's people out there who know what I do and they understand me and they get me. And so I receive little to no kickback about, or even when I'm sharing pretty wild clips, you know, about Fat Mike and, you know, like John Lydon and Gene Simmons, and I'll often, you know, proclaim my respect and adoration for fairly divisive, problematic people. And I never get any form of like, nah, fuck that guy. Like, I don't know. People just let me get on with my thing. And I feel really grateful for that. I'm just like, thanks for not giving me shit and cancelling me. I'm going to carry on.
I think that's it, where the authenticity comes in. Because if you, you know, A, if you are authentic and introspective enough to, you know, like you say, there are certain figures that are more divisive than others. And if people understand that you're coming, sort of approaching these people with an authentic interest in them, that's very different. And obviously then you build an audience around your authentic self, naturally they're just going to know how, what angle you're taking on these things. Whereas just somebody who doesn't know anything about you or doesn't care to know anything about you can make a judgment at the snap of the fingers. So I think
there was one guy who, interestingly enough, his Instagram handle is Progress Through Running. So he's all about trying to better himself through exercise. And I posted about the Pantera reunion and I said, I'm just excited to see these shows and hear these songs. That's my statement. That's all I've got to say. It's going to be awesome. And if you don't want to see it, that's totally cool. I understand why, but I do. And I'm stoked. This Progress Through Running idiot comes on. Well, you know, I think you're going to get blisters or splinters or whatever from sitting on the fence that hard. And I'm like, all right, you're following me. I don't even know you are. So jog on. So I thought it was a funny joke, Progress Through Running. And then he starts going, you know, he's laying into me and I'm like, he goes, why won't you explain why it's okay to support a racist? And I'm like, I'm explaining to you that I don't care to engage in this conversation. This is my personal Instagram page. If you want to go and have a rant and a rave and debate whether Phil Anselmo is or is not a racist, fuck off somewhere else and do that, because this ain't what this page is about. And then this dude went on to both of my podcasts on Apple Podcasts and wrote scathing reviews of both of them, one star, fuck this. And so what you're then doing is you're coming after me and my life and my work, you know, and all I have to go on is the platforms in which I exist creatively. And so if someone who had never heard of my show before just goes, oh, Life in the Stocks, let's have a look, and the first review is like one star, this guy's an app, you're then going to deter that person from listening to my show, and you're directly affecting my ability to earn a living and exist as a human and do something that I've spent 13 years building because of one moment where I wouldn't in give you what you want. And that's why I'm just like, fuck those kind of people. Like, I got no time for that. I don't need to explain or defend myself to anyone. If you don't want to fucking jive with what I do, there's the door. And I'm cool with that. But what I will not do is ever explain myself to a stranger for my choice to fucking support a tour of a band that might have one problematic figure in. Like, I will never, ever die on that hill. I'll sooner fucking burn the hill down and take you with me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not dying on the hill, but I am destroying it with you.
So, yeah.
Lovely.
So technically I am dying on the hill, but my way.
Yeah. Yeah. Blaze of glory, like something quite romantic about the, yeah. So I suppose a good question maybe to finish up on would be,
do you hate everyone? No.
Which people do you hate? Yeah. what would be, if you had to pick a hill to die on, you know,
okay,
what would that hill be?
The hill would be, so it was the choice between humanity or nature to survive. I would die on the hill with nature, and I would choose to sacrifice all of us for the sake of planet Earth. I'm very kind of, what's the dude from Guardians of the Galaxy there? Thanos. Great. It's very Thanos. I do believe that Earth will continue to exist long after we're gone, and life will continue to exist as it had before us, and it will again. You know, the dinosaurs has their time. We'll have ours, and I don't wish harm on any living being. But the hill that I would die on is, I would sooner save the planet than save the human race.
That's a hot take. We can get some comments on that one.
And there's your tagline for the fucking show. And they'll go, wow, I'm not listening to that show. This guy seems like a cunt. The one thing he didn't want to be seen as. I just think that animals and nature don't have an ego. You know, that's what pure existence and creativity and life is a world without ego. And ego has given the world so much good stuff in terms of art. And obviously, I don't think you can really be a valid and vital artist without a strong sense of ego. That's why so many artists and creatives do have them. And, you know, I know I do too, but I try to not have. And I think that, you know, creativity is a very magical and splendorous thing. And I think a lot of human action deters from the beauty and the splendor of pure creativity. And so if I did have to die on the hill, then it would be Noah's Ark, not a hill. And I'd save the animals, and I'd go bye-bye to everyone. Like, Noah had the right idea. Noah literally had the right idea. Take the animals, save them. Let's start again. Let's do better next time.
Nice, yeah. Well, I guess, yeah, of all the hills, mine might have just been like, I don't know, no pineapple on pizza or something. I would have, my hill's a lot smaller than yours. Mine's like a molehill.
This is end days business.
Yeah.
And Noah is my favorite film of all time. It's so profound. I watched it a couple of days after getting out of hospital, after being lied up in bed for 3 months with a broken spine. First thing I did pretty much is go see Noah with my mum and then my dad the next night. And it's such a wild, you know, Darren Aronofsky is a cinematic genius, no doubt about that. And what he managed to do with that film is take the greatest story ever told, in which Noah's Ark, there is no greater story than that. You can try and tell me, like, oh, what about Shawshank Redemption? I don't think so, mate. Noah's Ark and the end of the earth is the greatest story ever told. And what he managed to do is take the greatest story ever told, reposition it in this, you know, wild, challenging, confrontational, bizarre, brilliant cinematic universe. He also made it a family drama and made it all about just, you know, it made like a small human family drama, almost like a fucking soap opera within this huge backdrop, and got to the root of all of these things that I'm, you know, explaining in a far less eloquent way about creativity and the nature of like existence and spirituality and all these huge topics. I think he nailed it on every level. And it really does tap into this whole idea of, like, you know, humanity, and is it the root of all evil in this world? Kind of is. You know, ain't the animals.
I want to leave you with two takes.
Okay.
To take away. So one of the best stories I've ever encountered was actually not that long ago. Though I didn't actually massively like the movie, or it was okay. The story and the meaning behind it, I thought, was really profound. Have you seen Arrival? Have you seen that movie?
Of course, Amy Adams is, yeah. In a dream world, me and her are married.
Okay, so, well, maybe not in this, maybe not in Arrival, though. That wouldn't
work. No, not in Arrival. More like The Fighter, more her character in The Fighter. Okay. She's an MTV girl, Matt. She's wild.
So my point being that the fact that they, spoiler alert, she finds out all about her future and the horrible consequences of her choices that aren't really her fault from memory, but still chooses to engage in that whole idea of, you know, the purpose in life being more than just pure happiness, you know, kind of thing. Like, I think that whole, I'm not going to try and explain the whole plot, you know, but anyone that wants to get a cool message out of a movie, I'd recommend that. The other one was, going back to what you're talking about, the wedding. I was doing a podcast, so literally it's the last one I put out, with Angel Vivaldi. I don't know if you know him, guitar player. He's a very cool guy. Anyway,
he, no relation to the Vivaldi
or any angels. No, I don't think so. and he said a really good alternative to what do you do is what keeps you busy. You know, so asking someone what keeps you busy, because then they can answer with their job, but all they can answer with, you know, like
prying. Like, the reason I hate the question in a social context with strangers, what do you do, is because you know that your answer is going to determine their sense of how valuable you are as a person to them in that situation. You know, it's I'm going to judge you on your answer. I'm going to judge you on your answer. And then I'm going to treat you how your answer dictates from then on in. Whereas that is reframing it in a really cool, positive way. You know, it's like, how do you fill your time? What brings you satisfaction? What brings you joy?
Or just like, what do you think about, even, you know, like, what keeps your mind busy? Stuff, all
just,
of these,
you know, the end of the world, natural disasters, that kind of, Noah's Ark, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway,
I'm taking two horses with me anyway.
Two bananas.
Two bananas and a unicorn.
Where's the other unicorn?
Well, they only need one, apparently, or just a dinosaur instead.
And create some weird sort of unisaur.
create some new creatures.
A dinocorn, yeah. Cool. So we had, you've already got your question, which was, what do you want to be? Was it something along the
lines? How would you like to be remembered?
Yeah.
Once you are gone. Once Noah's Ark has taken the animals, but not you, to a new paradise world. How would the animals like to remember you? You know, you could, don't overcomplicate. They'll be like, what? Just after you're gone, how would you like to be remembered that those that you've left behind, by those that you've left behind?
Can you imagine that Noah's Ark, that, you know, obviously they take two humans because humans are animals and you're one of them. Can you imagine the pressure?
Who's the other?
Oh, yeah.
The other's Amy Adams.
Yeah. They're one in however many billion chance.
Yeah.
That would be like, okay.
I mean,
of all the ways this could have gone,
if there's a chance that I am the person that God chooses to save the animals, then I'm pretty sure there's a strong chance that I can get to go with Amy Adams.
What if what if it's the running guy? What if the running guy is just sat
the running guy? Then I will get all the animals on board with his help, and then just as the boat's about to take off, I will commit seppuku and dive off the ship and end my own life. And actually probably take him with me, because I wouldn't want to leave the animals with him. So yeah, I'd get his help to fill the boat with all the animals, and then I'd go, by the way, mate, there's not actually room for us. And then I would jump off with him and we'd go down like Jack and Rose and Titanic. I'd be going, don't let go, progress through running. Actually do please let go, and don't leave a 1-star review on my Apple podcast page, because it's not nice.
You just see in your bunk on Noah's Ark, it's like a one cross. Like,
bing. Yeah.
Wicked. Okay. And also,
and what was the other question? What
if you've got an artist? Recommend, yeah, of any type you could recommend.
Yeah, I should have thought about this earlier, because you're gonna have dead air time now.
It's all right. That happens at every podcast.
One artist.
Singular. This is dead air time, isn't it?
Complete dead air time, yeah. I don't mind though. If this ship's going down, I'm taking you with me.
It's just the poor artist is going
to
suffer.
No, do you know what I'd just say? I'd just say George Carlin all day. Everything that guy had to say about humanity was on the money, and he made it funny. He was a philosopher. He was a thinker. He was a true genius and one of the funniest, if not the funniest, stand-up comedian of all time. He'll get you thinking and he'll get you laughing until the end of time. So yeah, if you're not familiar, like, in and out familiar with all of his viewpoints and bits and everything, then just go on YouTube. You can find montages of all his best bits. Just deep dive on that. And I think what he will do along the way is not only, as I said, entertain and amuse, but he'll also make you think about things a little bit differently and challenge your perspective on a few things. And all he wanted to do was inspire people to be better. You know, his approach was quite aggressive, but that was his end game, really. It was just like, man, we can all be better. We can do better. And here's how I think we can get there. And let's have a laugh or two along the way. So yeah, George Carlin, binge him.
Yeah, I've seen a bit of his stuff. I can definitely second that. Well, I can second it from what I've seen. Cool balance of humor and points,
Poignant points as well that he makes in a pointed way.
Lots of poi in that that sentence there.
Now let's poise for thought. Yeah. It's been a pleasure, dude. Thank you for a lovely chat. And I don't really think too much about what I say, as hopefully that comes across. And you know, I think when I listen back to podcasts that I've been on, I always be like, oh, I've changed my mind since then. But I think whenever I am in a situation where I do just speak without filter, it's a sign that I, you know, stimulated and enjoying the conversation. So thank you for a wonderful chat. And I hope I don't upset or alienate any of your audience.
Any of the animals listening, yeah.
They're on board.
Anything you want to sort of promote or plug to finish up?
Just be a better human. You know, we're all trying to be better. I mean, we're not all trying, that's the problem. We should all be trying to be better. I don't need to promote or plug anything. Just every day when you look in the mirror, think, A, I'm alive, that's awesome. And B, what can I do today that will change the world in a tiny, minuscule way, slightly for the better? And if we all do that more, things might get better. So yeah, just be the best you can be, enjoy your life, take care of each other, and listen to George Carlin.
Awesome. Thank you.